I got a pencil thing going on here. Allison Young is so cool, and she kind of goes by the name Blissful, and that's what people use when they describe her. And as I was having this conversation with her, I felt blissful inside. I felt so happy. I felt so amazing. She just was incredible. And so I'm excited to introduce Allison to you today. She is presenting at our summit. No big surprise there. And we talk about everything from playing the flute to through hiking, to how hard the Appalachian Trail is, and so many more things. So I'm going to let you go ahead and enjoy my conversation with Allison today. And if you want to learn more about our virtual summit, our online conference going on in May, please head on over to our website, hikelikeawoman.com. Thank you. And I'll let you enjoy my conversation with Allison. So Allison, I have a secret and no one knows this about me, but we have something in common. Actually, we have quite a few things in common, but I also play the flute.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
wow. I know. Cool. Let me tell you this. And then I need some advice from a more experienced musician. So I played the flute in high school. I was in all the bands. I had so much fun. And then I did not pick up my instrument until December, like 2 months ago. Oh, wow. I just like stuck it up in the attic. And then my kids played the guitar and the drums. And they were playing one night and I was like, I should get my flute out and I should play with them. And I did. And we had so much fun and we jammed like every single night. I took my flute to the music store and they like knocked all the dents out and cleaned it up for me and fixed all the little pads. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot how much I loved playing music. So talk to me about, you're like this incredibly accomplished outdoor woman, but you're also a musician. So how do you like find this harmony in your life with all that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's such a great question. So, I mean, a little bit of history about my flute playing. So I was a professional flutist. I went to the Interlochen Arts Academy, to USC, to Cleveland Institute of Music. I started playing professionally with orchestras. I mean, went all the way up to playing with like the Boston Symphony and with Leonard Bernstein and Tanglewood. I did really cool things. I've recorded CDs. You can look up Allison Young, flutist, and you can find my CDs. But about 25 years ago, so I had this professional career, and one day I picked up my flute and I could not remember where to put my hands at all. I literally did not. No, it was like a brief thing. And I was like, oh my God, what is this? And then it got away. But what was developing in my brain was something called dystonia. So dystonia is a neurological movement disorder. And it's related to Parkinson's. It's related to essential tremor, to tic. Mm-hmm. Essential, I think it's what it's called when you move. And it only shows, it's focal dystonia. It only shows up when I have my hands on my flute. And I stopped being able to like remember. It was almost like I know it's horrible. It was a horrible, devastating loss, but it was almost like a dementia. You know, like suddenly I couldn't see or remember basically my left hand. So anyone who plays the flute knows the left hand's like a little more complicated. It comes around, and so I couldn't lift things properly. And this is a while ago, as I said, it was 25 years, I was in my 30s. Oh. And so I eventually had to let go of my, and that's when I got into radio. And so I had this whole other career with radio. But all along, I mean, kind of the story in terms of like hiking and why that's so special, like all along, I've been a walker and walking just itself, just like going out your door. Yeah. And taking a walk around the neighborhood or going into a forest. So like, it doesn't have to be this big giant, you know, planned backpack trip. It can just be simply moving and that kind of rhythm. Most of us know it helps you sort of clear your head. It helps you get kind of centered, deal with problems. And then of course it grows from there. You want to go to really beautiful places and then you want to backpack. Yeah. So it's always a part of my life. So like when I played in the Grand Teton Music Festival, of course, I backpacked there. When I played in the Colorado Music Festival, I backpacked there. In Europe, South America. I mean, I always had this thing going on. Mm-hmm. And so like over time, hiking and being outdoors became so important to me. And then I was a radio host at American Public Media, and I would take these like giant vacations to go on long trips. I mean, I did was the Traverse of the Alps, the Gersenk, which is 450 miles or something. And
yeah,
fast. I got it done in 4 weeks, but you know, that's kind of a lot to be away from work. And eventually there's like all these things to do with like, I love being outdoors.
Yeah,
I love that, but I also love music, and I liked being this kind of classical music person. And so eventually I was like, all right, there needs to be a time when I do a through hike.
Yeah.
Ooh, you know, the big, like an Appalachian Trail kind of thing, PCT. There were a lot of things that were kind of pointing to that. I mean, having dystonia was this extremely devastating loss, but then I was also developing arthritis, and I knew that like my time was running out. I got breast cancer. I mean, it was like, all right, you know what? You're meeting mortality. Now's the time to go. Mm-hmm. So I asked for leave of absence, and I went for 5 months to New Zealand and walked the Te Araroa, which is the long pathway of New Zealand. Yeah, it's almost 2,000 miles, but with other trails I did, it's about 2,000 miles, my first through hike. And I know I'm like giving this like really long answer to
the No, I love this.
But the really amazing thing that happened in that particular sort of moment in my life, like, ooh, you know, time's running out, you know, you need to, like a YOLO thing. I knew I needed money to do the trip. And actually my husband and I were walking the Superior Hiking Trail. We live in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I really want to do this hike. I mean, how am I going to, you know, kind of walking along, how am I going to do this thing? And it all of a sudden popped in my head, the amount of money that I needed to walk the trail was exactly how much my professional flute was worth.
Oh.
And so I sold it. And it was like this moment in the universe of, I'm going to let go of this dream that somehow, I mean, my neurological condition's incurable. So it was like, somehow I could get back to playing flute like that again. It wasn't going to happen. And interestingly enough, I sold it to an adult student who plays it all the time. I mean, and it's beautiful, and it's like being played in the universe.
But
it was a flute for a hike. I mean, it was like this really like almost universe quid pro quo. We're going to trade, you know, and it required accepting change and accepting loss, mm-hmm. and accepting wanting something else more than a past that was gone. Like I could still mourn the past, but it was over. So that's kind of the story about that. That's your long answer to the question.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. But I feel like music is still a part of your life, isn't it? Even though you can't play anymore.
Yeah, it is. So I can't, I cannot play fast and accurately with my left hand. It does this thing where it kind of moves like this. And as I said, focal dystonia it shows up in a particular task specific, as
they
call it. So like I can play on a pencil, you know, pretty well and fake it. But once I get there, it's almost as though my brain just goes, nope, you're not going to be able to do that. So weirdly enough, so I did the Te Araroa, and then I did the PCT kind of one after another. So I've gone a year. I came home, and this composer friend of mine in Minnesota, so I'm very connected to the music community. Posted music, asked me if I would play for a concert. And I was like, I don't really play. Oh, and I'm sorry, there was another little part to the story. The student that bought my flute was like, oh my gosh, if I buy your flute, you won't have a flute. So what she did was she traded a flute lesson for her beginner flute. So it's, I mean, for any of you know about music, it's like a Gemeinhardt, you know, little the one you'd play in fifth grade. You probably you have, right? And what was so weird about this flute, I mean, I still have it, I could have pulled it up. It has this like sweet, lovely tone, and all the holes are closed. So like my fingers can do, and they can still play. And so I was called by this composer to play. And then things started, like the universe said, no, you know what? You're still going to play. So I got these jobs, these kind of regular flute gigs, you know, paid. It's like a freelance gig at churches.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a joke in the music world. It's such a horrible one. Like, she's so bad, she can't play Come to Jesus in whole notes. And the truth is, like, I am playing Come to Jesus in whole notes. I'm playing, you know, I'm working around my ability. But to play at it's limited, you know? So I feel really blessed to have that opportunity. And it's not, you know, I'm not trying to make my living that way, or not trying to like make it that way. Yeah.
It's still a part of your life and you still love it. And what an amazing, it's so amazing how you're on a hike with your husband and you have this problem in your mind and you're thinking, it's not a want. I don't want it. I need to do that trail. And then it just happened. And I don't know if you agree with this or not, but I think sometimes when I have a problem or I'm stressed out or overwhelmed or just feeling like I can't do it all, and if I just go outside and put one foot in front of the other, it's kind of like the path just appears.
It totally does. So I'm not like a super religious person, but I do play in this church every Sunday and it's wonderful, good sermons, blah, blah, blah. But I do feel that there's some, you know, spirit, there's something that I actually have conversations with while I'm on trail. I call her the goddess. So my supreme being is a woman. I don't know if she's God or if she's kind of wisdom, sort of the better part of me.
Yeah.
So like this summer, I went on the Appalachian Trail, which it was the worst summer of ever in history in Maine. Rain, floods. I mean, actually, someone lost his life going into a flooded stream. So it was a laughing matter. It was so horrible.
Oh.
And I decided, you know, I wanted to see what would happen if I started from Mount Katahdin and went south. I thought, oh, I've done the PCT. I can do anything.
Yeah.
Appalachian Trail is so hard, especially in the north. It's like climbing on rocks and throwing your sticks down and trying to, you know, descend without breaking your neck.
Yeah.
So I remember like exactly where I was, kind of going over something, and I'm alone and it's raining and you can't see anything and you're just, we're on the roots, look, please don't fall. Yeah. And I had this problem, that's just been kind of persistent. It's a relationship problem with people in my life. And I was going back and forth, like, I could say this or I could do that. And there were like three things. I could do A, I could do B, I could do C. What do you think? And I was going over and over and over this. And as I was walking, all of a sudden, another path opened. Like you could do D. There's like a fourth thing that I'd never thought of. And it was so, I mean, I remember precisely where it was, and I was in a really hard place. And it was like, oh, I'd never thought of it like that. Mm-hmm. And it was actually much more, I mean, it was opening my heart too. It wasn't just like, I'm going to tell that person what I think, you know, or I'm going to never talk to them again. It was something completely different. And could I have gotten to it on my own, just, you know, living in life? Maybe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's like actually scientific research about the literal, you know, putting your feet on the ground, you do this thing, this kind of retrograde where you're pushing the blood in time to your stride to your brain. And so you're like massaging this creative problem-solving part of your brain while you're physically moving. I mean, they've studied it. It works.
Amazing.
I know. It's completely amazing. So that's why walking is so addictive, I think.
And you have quite the impressive resume. I think I got lost on your website. 12,000 miles, 6 continents, health, all sorts of things. What have you learned from all of these miles of just putting one foot in front of the other?
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably a huge list, but.
Yeah. I mean, well, my talk for the summit is 10 things I learned. That helped me now. I mean, meaning like at home and with life's problems.
And
I think the biggest sort of overarching theme is that it's sort of the opposite of what we think. I did this talk yesterday where someone was like, you know, wow, you're so brave and courageous. What did it feel like to get to the end? You're like superstar. And I'm thinking, you know, it's really kind of funny because it's actually quieter than that. I mean, the goal of hiking is not so much to triumph, but to feel alive.
Mm.
And you know, hardship can make us feel alive.
Yeah.
Trying is actually more courageous than holding back. Not seizing the day, not being carpe diem works better. So like letting the day unfold as opposed to, you know, here's what I'm doing today. I mean, that doesn't mean that you're just like this totally disorganized hiker and you go out without essentials.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like this kind of opposite thing. And I think that's what I found. And also like you know, as I said about the Appalachian Trail, you're just like, easy.
Right.
You know, yeah. There you get your ass kicked. Totally. Mm-hmm. And you know, and you're crying half the time. Or like the Arizona Trail is super hard. And I found it really challenging and sort of angry that it was challenging. I was like, ma, what's, you know, and so you have to like remind yourself to be curious rather than certain.
Mm.
Which is, you know, I mean, it's like a lesson for everything we do in life, right? You can't, there's no such thing as absolute certainty or absolute security. Everything is sort of evolving and changing. And the trail ahead of you does that too, in delightful ways and in, you know, sometimes very frustrating ways. So I would say that's the biggest overarching lesson from hiking 12,000. I mean, I think it's like 12,000 plus or minus, right? You know, I'm just, yeah. I haven't sat down and calculated everything I've done. I'm 59. So this is before we had apps.
Yeah. Yeah. Before Garmin was tracking your every move.
Every move, right?
I have had this kind of awakening since cancer. And, you know, a lot of people have like this big, profound experience and they go through something traumatic and they're like, I need to write a book or I need to do this big thing or I need to do that thing. And I've found that I just want to be where I am. And I heard a quote yesterday that was like, be where your feet are. Mm-hmm. And I really think that is kind of, that just spoke to me. And as you're talking about all of these trails and hiking, but also just, you know, kind of being really chill about it. I think that's the goal, is just to be where our feet are.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard similar ones where people say like bloom where you're planted.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I definitely have a type A personality and I always want more. And, you know, and I wouldn't say that I fight with that. But I do find that something like a cancer diagnosis, even though mine was treatable, even though we think mm-hmm. that I'm cured, I mean, it's, you know, you still have,
you never know.
You still have that remission period. You know, but oh my gosh, the level of panic mm-hmm. and the level of just sheer all the emotions. I mean, anger and tears and sorrow, and just it's so hard to manage all of those mm-hmm. feelings. And then I think one of the things, I'm not so sure this relates to sort of bloom where you're planted, but one of the things I talked about yesterday when I gave this talk about, I call it hike your own hike and helping people sort of find their right path.
Yeah. Yeah.
I found through cancer that like actually feeling your emotions fully and totally accepting them, the darkest mm-hmm. emotions.
Yeah.
And just, you know, you don't want to be a total jerk about it. I mean, you don't want to be impossible to be around, but to kind of face them. And then you get to a point where you're like, okay, I'm rolling up my sleeves now. What is the next right thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even survivalists know about this, that they go through, you know, people who've been like in plane crashes where they're in nowhere or they're, you know, at sea. I just read this amazing book called Albatross.
Oh, okay.
Oh my gosh. It's not hikers. It's a sailor who was on a sailboat, and it's 1982. So she has kind of crazy hair, right? But anyway, he survived. Three people died and it was terrible. And there were mistakes by the Coast Guard. It's awful, but there's the whole psychological thing she goes through
mm-hmm.
being in this kind of panic, disorganized state, finally focusing down. And the most beautiful thing she writes in the book is how at a certain point, she started to see the stars above them. And she sticks her head in the water at one point to kind of see, because there's something like hitting the boat. And she sticks her head in to look. And it's this just gigantic school of fish. And the beauty in it. And here she is in a situation where, I mean, it was very likely she was going to die because they were out 5 days without any fresh water, without any food. I mean, and you start to get, you know, sores on your body from the salt water. I mean, it's very serious.
Oh.
She was able to somehow respect the beauty where she was in this moment. And, you know, of course, that's the whole thing about like your feet are here. Your feet are in this place now, you know. I want to be on trail right now. I want to be hiking, but I'm talking to you right now. And I'm having this glorious moment of connection and of ideas and how beautiful that is. So like living in the present moment is, you know, mindfulness, coming back to what is now and being aware, like when you have cancer, oh my God. I mean, even when it's not as horrible as some people who are really suffering and know that their end is coming. You accept life's limitations and you say, yeah, there's going to be an end and it could be bad or it could be sooner than I want. But what is in this moment here?
Wow. Yeah.
Sorry to be so dark.
But no.
The trail does that to us. You know, we're walking with rocks and it's miserable. I mean, the Arizona trail I thought was very hard. You're walking on roads sometimes with these giant rocks and it hurts. And it's like, okay, what is here right now that, I mean, you can either laugh at it too. You know, I think that's why people call me blissful, because I just have this shit eating grin.
You're like, damn it. I'm going to smile my way through this boulder field. Yeah. That's so profound though. And you've been through so many challenges. And you've been able to just weather the storm. How do you do that? How do you get through all of these? I'm thinking, you know, music, all the things. Like, how do you do it?
I do have to give credit where credit's due. I mean, I have a wonderful husband, so I have a family that that supports. He keeps me grounded. And there was a Well, I should preface it by saying there's something kind of amazing about Richard that I don't know anyone else in the world who can do this. In the middle of the night, I might be having a panic attack and I wake up, especially when I went through menopause, because you tend to wake up more and you're sweaty and blah. And he can be awakened and then he can just go back to sleep. So like he can be awakened and say something to you, you know, calm down or here's some, you know, amazing piece of wisdom. And then he's able to go back to sleep, which most people would be like,
"That's amazing!"
You know, that
would be so jealous.
So there was this moment a number of years ago where, you know, the shit was really hitting the fan, and I was having a lot of panic attacks. I tend to be a more anxious person than a depressed person. I just get like the brain. And I woke up and I'm like, oh my God, everything's been taken away from me. I gave too much and all of it was taken.
Yeah. Yeah.
Richard said, give it all away. We'll make more.
What?
And I was like, what? Isn't that crazy? I know. And then the next day I ask him about it. He's like, what? Did I say that? But isn't that an interesting concept? I mean, this is like that whole abundance mentality that there's enough. You know, the whole idea of JOMO, you know, joy of missing out rather than FOMO, which is like everybody else on Instagram looks happier than me. Listen, I'm the worst. I'm the worst all the time. But to say, you know, let it go, you know, because you'll make more. There's more that you're creative enough. There's enough in you and there's enough in life. And that helps us when, you know, like having to quit something on trail, having to leave trail because of a physical thing or because you hate it or because it's raining nonstop or you have to go home and have a surgery. I mean, you're just like, okay, the trail will still be here. I'll have another chance. Or if I don't have another chance, there'll be something else. You know, life is wider than we think of it. That's something my great grandma apparently said. I'd never met her, but it was passed down. Life is short, but it's also wide. There's more if you notice it. I mean, it requires a commitment of us.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not to be such a whiny butt, which I am most of the time. I admit it.
Well, and if we're constantly rushing, right, and we're trying to do this and that and doing all the things and trying to be everything to all the people, and if we're not taking that time to slow down, take a step back, take a deep breath, and look at the bigger picture, we can't see the width, we can't see the depth, because it's like this immediate crisis. I have to figure out this thing instead of like, whoa, look at that beautiful fish. Look at the stars in the sky. Look at that flower. Look at that rain cloud. Look at this big, gigantic picture.
Right. Right. I mean, for sure. And I mean, a lot of people will say it's like gratitude, you know, mm-hmm. going through your day. That's always a really healthy thing to do at night or in the morning, you know, to sort of say, you know, today's a good day for a good day.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of see. So we were talking about cancer, and I briefly mentioned people going through things. And one of my friends has been diagnosed with brain cancer. I mean, it's going to be bad. And she tells me that I'm now part of her routine. So we talk briefly every night, you know, sweet dreams and how's your day?
Yeah.
And there's just an interesting sort of touching of space. I mean, she has a talk about a cosmic ripoff. I mean, we can all look at our lives and say someone else has it way harder than us, which can put things in perspective for sure. But also, like, how are we called? You know, you were mentioning about being things to all people. How are we called to? And I guess to use a religious term, to minister to, or to show empathy for someone who's got a tougher time than us, or someone who even if it's not like demonstrably tougher, it's just that they are having a harder time managing. Can we give? And then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, I'm stronger than I thought I was. I mean, a lot of people tell me I'm brave and I'm courageous. It's like, really?
You don't see me crying into my pillow at night. You don't know how many tears we've had crying in cancer center parking lots.
Oh God, it's the worst.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that those are sort of like the wise pieces that that pull our lives together. And you know, right now it's 1 degree in Minnesota, and it there's no snow, which is kind of weird.
What? No,
I mean, a little, but you can't ski, and you can't really ski. Well, at least in Minneapolis, north it's better. But you know, so it's like but the sun is shining. So you know, there's kind of you have to look at it that way.
So cool. Allison, you're a delight, and I hope that we can hike in person sometime, because I would love to meet you and connect. Where can people go to learn more about you and more about what you do and all the things?
So, because I worked in public radio for 15 years, I have created a podcast called Blissful Hiker Podcast. That's very public radio. So it's personal essay with my more radio voice and found sound. So it's kind of cool. So it's blissfulhikerpodcast.com. Okay. It's all the platforms. And I'm known as Blissful Hiker. So blissfulhiker.com is my website and has all kinds of interesting stuff there, pictures. You can see a video of me breaking down in New Zealand and crying and saying, I want to come home and I want beer and candy.
I love candy.
So blissfulhiker.com. That's where you can go.
Oh, thank you so much. I bet you didn't know that I used to play the flute. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Allison today. And if you want to learn more about her and all of the amazing speakers that we'll be presenting at our virtual summit, head on over to our website, hikelikeawoman.com. There you can find information about our speakers. You can find our schedule. If you can't attend live, you can find out how you can check out all the replays to all of the presentations, all the things. And we're giving away some cool stuff too. So head on over to our website, hikelikeawoman.com. Click that tab that says summit for all the details. Thanks so much, and I'll catch you next time.